They said it was forbidden. They said it was dangerous. They were right. Introducing the paranoid American homunculus owner's manual. Dive into the arcane, into the hidden corners of the occult. This isn't just a comic. It's a hidden tome of supernatural power. All original artwork illustrating the groundbreaking research of Juan Ayala, one of the only living homunculologists of our time. Learn how to summon your own homunculus, an enigma wrapped in the fabric of reality itself, their power at your fingertips, their existence, your secret. Explore the mysteries of the Aristotelian, the spiritual, the Paracelsian, the Crowleyan homunculus, ancient knowledge lost to time, now unearthed in this forbidden tale. This comic book holds truths not meant for the light of day, knowledge that was buried, feared, and shunned. Are you ready to uncover the hidden, the paranoid American homunculus owner's manual, not for the faint of heart? Available now from Paranoid American. Get your copy at tjojp.com or paranoidamerican.com today.
Podcast with your host Juan Ayala.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy / one-on-one podcast / Paranoid American radio hour. Actually, you are the co-host of a podcast. Thomas, tell us about your podcast, because I don't think I've had you on my show since you've started this.
It just started as a book review club that me and Juan were throwing an idea around. But yeah, it's the occult, it's occultbookclub.com, and it'll just bring you to a YouTube playlist. But we've just been going through pretty much open source texts that have been, you know, released in 1800s and early 1900s. And if you want one in particular, one of my favorites is the Paul Benjamin Blood series, which is a guy that got really stoned basically on nitrous when he got his tooth removed in the late 1800s, and he claimed that as he was coming down off nitrous for the first time in his life, he was able to understand all of Hegel's writing, like Hegelian philosophy. He just understood it because of this nitrous effect, and for the next 30 years of his life, and he was like 30 years old this time, for the next 30 years of his life he dedicated to just getting high off nitrous and trying to decipher like all the philosophy he could get his hands on, and trying to sort of like put it in layman's terms. He didn't do a great job at that part, but
no,
it was a valiant effort.
Interesting. Well, we're already off to the races here. I hope we could get back to that and maybe talk about some of the interesting books you guys have covered in 2022. It's been an interesting year. Juan and I started a podcast that is now defunct, called the Illuminati Confirmed Podcast. Juan, for those deaf, mute, and blind who have not seen you somehow on my podcast yet, can you please introduce yourself and your show?
Juan from the Juan Juan Podcast. I cover anything I deem interesting, mostly the occult, magic, alchemy, etc. And yeah, I do have a show with Paranoid American here, and that particular episode hurt my sack reading that, actually, because a lot of these texts are old, right? It's over 100 years old. So the language that they use, it just hurt my brain reading it. But can you imagine going to the dentist and having this epiphany of a moment when you're peeking on nitrous, that you're able to understand all the most complex philosophical ideas that have ever existed at that one peak? And then it all goes away, and then you chase that same high for the rest of your life. So this dude came out with that book when he first was like 30 years old. And then he's like 70 or something, writing at the end of his life another book about what he chased all those years. And there's like people writing into him and all this stuff. So yeah, that particular episode really hurt my brain. But yeah, again, I talk about anything I deem interesting and yeah.
It hurts your brain and your sack. I've never heard someone conflate those two.
As above, so below.
Right. Okay. Well, and yeah, people who are familiar with this podcast should know the both of you. Actually, Thomas appeared on my show far before you ever did, Juan. Thomas was on episode 44.
Thomas is a psyop.
You broke my cherry.
Yeah, that was like a sort of radio style interview. I called you up on my phone and I had some other co-hosts with me. And yeah, so it's cool to be here 2022. I know you're going to be putting this on your feed as well, Juan. So shout out to all the listeners over there. But this is 2022 wrapped. I had Donut on. We did a little bit of wrap up, but I wanted to have you both on to talk about not only some of the guests we've interviewed and some of the books that we've looked into, but maybe even what's to come next.
I got a new book. You want to see it?
Yeah, sure. That's what's to come next right now. I meant more 2023. I'm not one for predictions, but that is the atmosphere that we're in. People love to make predictions. Ooh, Stairway to Heaven by Peter Levenda, Chinese alchemist, Jewish Kabbalist, and the Art of Spiritual Transformation.
I am a sucker for Levenda.
Yeah, I recently got 3 Levenda books. I got the first 2 of his Sinister Forces series, and then I got this book that's right over here, The Secret Temple, Mason's Mysteries and the Founding of America. So getting ready to dig into those very soon. But, you know, Peter Levenda is important for me because he was the guy who I first heard mention John Winthrop the Younger. It was during his interview, one of his interviews on the Higher Side Chats, and he said, oh, yeah, a lot of people don't know. One of the governors of Connecticut was an alchemist, and he wasn't very clear about that. And being from Connecticut, I heard that, and I was like, whoa, what? So I immediately went to Wikipedia. I looked up the governors of Connecticut, and I looked up the governors of the state of Connecticut, not the colony of Connecticut. So I wasn't able to find initially who he was talking about. It was only a couple years later, at the beginning of 2022, when I put the pieces together, and I was like, oh, this is John Winthrop the Younger, who he was talking about, the first colonial governor of Connecticut. So he was
interesting,
older than, you know, the state of Connecticut. But yeah, he was an alchemist kicking around in the same area that I currently live, and that was a big shock, because, you know,
to what extent was he an alchemist?
Well, he was a member of the Royal Society. He was somewhat of an inventor, but more of on the philosophical side of alchemy rather than like the experimentation side of things. But he was obsessed with finding silver in Connecticut. That was one of his obsessions while he was over here, and he was trying to do some kind of work with the silver. But a lot of the alchemists around him were concerned with like medical alchemy and how these minerals could be used for health. You know, by then they were beyond the occult and philosophical alchemy and more towards like the Paracelsian practical applications of it, you know, or at least attempting to find practical applications of it.
One thing I found out recently, and Thomas might be familiar with it because obviously I do cover a lot of Florida history, is the Corshanity, the Corshans over here in, I forgot what part of Florida it is. It was a cult. And the guy was electrocuted. He had a vision, this divine feminine figure that came to him. He was convinced he was the reincarnation of Jesus Christ and the new Messiah. But the reason that he was doing these experiments was because he was an alchemist. And I recently came across one of the books that he read because they were talking about concave earth. Like that was their whole thing, that the sun and the stars and everything is encapsulated in a ball in the center, and the earth is like a clamshell. We're actually on the inside of it. Don't laugh, Thomas. I know you're about to laugh, bro. But point being, this dude was an alchemist, and they were trying to birth a homunculus, dude. So in Florida, they were trying to birth this homunculus, and I have one of his books that he wrote. He wrote 2 books. And this dude was beaten to death, bro. So this dude was beaten to death, and then he was put in a bathtub at the compound, and they were like, all right, we're going to wait this out because he's going to come back. He's going to be resurrected. And the dude started to like decompose, and the authorities had to step in. They're like, all right, we gotta get this guy out this bathtub because he started to stink up the place. But yeah, really interesting.
No, just one more day. I swear the homunculus is coming. Just one more day, guys.
Yeah, bro. So wild.
It's so weird. Also, I'm starting to notice a pattern that most sentences Juan finishes with the word homunculus or his paragraphs, you know. That's right. You start getting him wound up, and he's going to conclude with homunculus somehow.
I love the different shapes of the earth. It reminds me of like the early 2000s dot-com bubble where like everyone was trying to buy every name. Like you could just go through the dictionary and people were just buying, you know, like word.com, going through every Latin word. I kind of feel there was a certain point in time when everyone was like, nah, it's a clamshell earth. Nah, it's pear shaped. Nah, it's peach shaped. Nah, it's concave. And like everyone just wanted to be the first one to claim like a certain shape.
Yeah.
So I could be like, I was the first one that said it was a cube. You know, I got it first.
It's a turtle shell. No, it's a teacup. No. Yeah, I hear you. Well, on the point of homunculus, Juan, it seems like 2022 was your year of the homunculus. I mean, can you trace back the first thought or idea that led you to getting into this? Like, was it something in 2022 that inspired this, like a news story or a book you found, a guest you had on your show? How did this start?
It was actually for an episode of the Occult Book Club where we were covering Manly P. Hall, the all-seeing eye. And coincidentally enough, even Daddy Manly P. Hall wrote about homunculi. And he wrote about a famous account that's actually in the Guinness Book of World Records for the
Guinness
biggest
book. Is that a competing book made by genies? The Guinness book?
Listen, English Guinness is not my first language. All right. So I'll read comments of people saying how I pronounce certain things. My first language was Spanish. So
you're
if you're, I feel targeted. I am a minority, and you are targeting me. So no, yeah,
you're good. You're good compared to others.
How do you say Guinness? Guinness,
like the beer. Guinness,
like the beer. It's literally the beer.
Guinness, yeah. Whatever. Who
it's
cares?
It's the same beer company.
Yeah. Anyways, Guinness has a world record for the biggest homunculus in their record.
Whoa. I feel like big homunculus is a little bit of a oxymoron. Like at a certain point, it's like, yo, baby, like lady, you just had a regular kid. You're not allowed to call that thing a homunculus.
Again, look it up. So we were doing research on that, and I came across one of the story of this famous count and how he made one. And I think he was working with, I want to say Thomas Aquino. I'm not sure if it was Thomas Aquino or who it was. But anyways, they were working together. This is 18th century, 17th century, one of those. And I came across what
Thomas Aquinas?
Aquinas. It's A-Q-U.
Like from the Bible?
No. This was an alchemist, theologian guy. It's somebody else.
Thomas of Aquinas was a figure from the Bible. I could be wrong, but there's a whole group of people that follow his teachings.
So he was a philosopher, Italian Dominican friar, and priest who was an influential philosopher, theologian. Yeah, so this is I'm talking about somebody else. I don't know about the guy in the Bible, but I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. So I came across that, and then I came across the Book of the Cow, which that was a whole rabbit hole. So we ended up doing a piece on that, and that was when the whole idea was born. And then Paranoid American had some books on Paracelsus and that whole thing. And I kind of don't like being known as the homunculus guy, but I guess, right, you, whatever sticks.
Someone's got to do it, man. You know what? I feel like the three of us in our own different ways, but sometimes it feels like dirty jobs of the conspiracy theory world. You know, like Mike Rowe goes in and he does gets like the firsthand experience and the research to show you how like the full job works, but you just get to see the end product, like the nice consumable prepackaged corn chips. You know what I mean? But like we kind of do that dirty jobs part where we go and we slog through 800 pages of like really rough, like, you know, no salt, no seasoning, sort of like ancient texts, yeah. And then just kind of try to come up with some interesting tidbits and hopefully not just kind of regurgitating them.
Yeah, I'm still recording.
We're running the show now?
Yeah, I guess so. So welcome to another episode of the 101 Podcast. Mark has left the building, but here we are to give you a spicy episode. So we've had artists drop us from the stuff that they started looking into, the stuff that we're looking into, and they're just like, you know, our values do not align. Our core values don't align. So let's go ahead and just drop it. And it is what it is. But yeah, dude, I feel you on that. But it's like, to touch on what Mark was saying about these guys that say that we're just conspiratainment, we're not really doing anything. But at the end of the day, what can you really do if there is a lizard cabal running things? What are you supposed to do? Is there anything that you can't even do?
One of the things that's really kind of hit me on top of the head this year, and I'm about to turn 40 next year. So in this year, most of the research I've been doing has been trying to go back to like 1400s, 1500s, 16, and just find like all these things that we kind of assume are connections. I'm trying to actually find the exact connections. Were these people actually in the same places? Did they actually have influence on each other? Any kind of documented versions of this? Or is there any written correspondence? And then one of the things that's kind of really hit me is that the difference between, say, like when your grandparents were born, right? My grandpa, I think, was born in 1920 or something. I mean, he died recently. But I mean, like from right now, 2020, back to 1920, 100 years. I mean, just take that chunk from me and my grandpa, right? So when my grandpa was talking to his grandpa, that dude was born in the 1820s. And then when he was talking to his grandpa, 1720s. And when we start getting into the 1720s, like we're talking about what we consider almost ancient history and alchemy, and, you know, sort of like Templar lore is still kind of active. So it's just kind of, you know, like the founding of America, the founding of the Bavarian Illuminati. So.
Oh, man, I dropped out there. You guys can hear me, right? I'm back.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're good.
All right. I don't sound too bad, right? I'm on my phone now.
What are they trying to take you out?
Yeah, I think my internet bill isn't paid, so they're trying to take me out. Either that or the connection is down. I don't know. I'm going to take blame, but who knows? Maybe it's the CIA. But you were saying something about you feel like the three of us are all kind of covering homunculus in a different way. Is that what you were going to say, Thomas? I missed that.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Right when you cut off, I was just saying that the material that we're kind of slogging through, we're trying to point out things that other people haven't caught yet, not just kind of regurgitating the same analysis, you know, like actually go to that little footnote and see where it says, oh, this was referenced in this text from 1438 and it's only in Latin, and then pulling that book up and then actually doing some kind of AI translation and reading it for yourself and retranslating it. Because sometimes this like little clip or this little quote will just make itself and just echo and echo and echo, and people keep repeating it. And then if you find what like the next four words were after that quote, all of a sudden it changes the context, or they say something even more interesting right after it. So that, to me, that's the fun part, but also kind of the most interesting, because now when it's reading it, it's like, wow, I can't believe no one's ever caught these connections before. And that's, I don't know, that in itself, I think is way beyond entertainment. I mean, that's contributing research to the world that's going to persist.
Well, and I agree. I'm glad you see it that way. I do too. I think, you know, big part of my foray into podcasting was synchromysticism. I mean, everything that's occurred in my life since I quit my job as a delivery guy has been synchromystic. My girlfriend and I, starting our relationship, she sees the world through a similar lens of synchromysticism. And, you know, before I started dating her, I went on this kind of journey down to Washington, D.C. I dropped someone off at the Dulles Airport and came back through D.C., you know, during the height of the pandemic, and drove along the Susquehanna River, which later I became friends with Michael Wan, the Susquehanna alchemist. And he and I hung out several times. My girlfriend and I have gone and visited him. So it's very synchronistic. And to bring it to the homunculus, around the same time you started talking about the homunculus and whatnot, I interviewed for the first time a guy who's very famous and very controversial in the conspiracy community, maybe more controversial than he is famous, Michael Hoffman, who in his book, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, along with James Shelby Downard, poses the theory that the Dumbo cylinder that was located near the Trinity blast site was in fact a metallic homunculi. So, you know, it's just interesting that, you know, here's this kind of revolutionary for his time conspiracy theorist, Michael Hoffman, along with the, you know, proto conspiracy whack job kind of archetype that is James Shelby Downer,
who by the way was my original inspiration for even starting doing comic really? books. I never would have started comic books if I hadn't. I at the exact time I was reading James Shelby Downer's memoir, can't remember what a name of it. It's like Devils of the Carnival or Life
Carnival. I have it right here.
I was reading that book. I was reading the book about the creature from Jekyll Island, and I was also reading The Invisibles, the comic book series. All three of those at the same time, and I just, yeah, that's the one right there. This book, actually, there's a story about Alexander Graham Bell and a guy named Cock Robin, and they get into, like, a fight or something, and, like, Cock Robin is, like, this cuck that the Jekyll Island Hunt Club, like, hires this dude to just come and be naked, I guess, or like, you know, it's a typical James Shelby Downard where they don't quite explain all the details. It's just like, yeah, and then I walked into the room and Alexander Graham Bell was naked and fighting this guy named Cock Robin, and, you know, and the next day Cock Robin was gone, and it, like, he just kind of skips those beats, and it's like, hold on a second,
yeah,
did you just say Alexander Graham Bell was stark naked in Jekyll Island? So first I thought it was just like a silly thing. So I look it up, and sure enough, man, the first thing I found was there was a book on nudism from the early 20th century, in the early 1900s, and it cites all the famous nudists of the time. And Alexander Graham Bell was one of, like, the main names. It was like, hey, here's some famous people that are nudists. And wow. So it just threw me down this rabbit hole of, man, how much of this crazy stuff that sounds ridiculous mm-hmm. is 100% true? And, you know, and it was like, if I put this in a comic, people might actually give it more credit than if I just put it in a book, because you read it in a book and you're like, that's silly, that can't happen. So now all of a sudden, if it's in a comic book, you pay a little bit more attention, and it's like, hey, this is actually based on a true story, even though I know you won't believe it.
Well, and it's I didn't know that. I'm really glad you told me that. It's funny you have that inspiration there, because I think, you know, some people who examine James Shelby Downard, they kind of theorize that maybe he was a fictional creation mm-hmm. by Hoffman and some other people. I think Hoffman would disagree with that. I asked him flat out, I think, and he said, no, James Shelby Downard was a real man. I was friends with him. I will say, though, you know, Hoffman has several pictures of himself and people that he's friends with or knew throughout the years on his website, none of which are James Shelby Downard. So
I've never heard that theory. I actually love that theory.
Yeah,
because that means that let's assume he was real person, James Shelby Downard might have been such a proto-conspiracy theorist that he himself ceases to be a physical entity anymore, and then just converted into an actual conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Like, that would be the ultimate goal of any hardcore conspiracy theorist. So
to exist outside of space and time.
Like if we're talking and Juan, you just make the ultimate connection on homunculus, and then just poof, you're just like a homunculus.
Well, that's alchemy. One of the magnum opus of alchemy is, once you do the magnum opus, the great work, you literally cease to exist, because the alchemical reaction, the light that you absorb from this reaction that's going on, it's absorbed into your DNA, and it reconstructs your DNA to where you're able to step outside of reality. So by you saying that, it sounds crazy, but maybe not so much, because that's literally what they chase in alchemy. Man,
I wish I could remember the it might be Peter Lavenda. I don't want to misquote this, but the quote is something like, was the JFK assassination a particle or a wave? And it makes me think, I think it was in a Sinister Forces, but it makes me think, like, maybe finding out who killed JFK is like a portal to, you know, like another universe.
So, yes.
Like, James Shelby Downard finds out who actually kills JFK, and just like finding the ineffable name of God, mm-hmm. once you see it or speak it out loud, you're just transported out of this reality.
That's what this is what this is all about. Stairway to Heaven. About different myths of ascension and what you're supposed to do, and what these different, because we were talking, I did an episode on the North Polaris, right? And this whole thing of why the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper, and you have it in all these symbolism and these secret societies. Well, what if it is some sort of gateway, but you have to connect certain type of dots, how you're saying? And I love that, dude, that the whole JFK thing. That's crazy.
Well, you know, I mean, the whole idea of the killing of the king and JFK being this Camelot figure, Arthurian kind of, he's the first Catholic president. He's got an Irish sort of lineage in his name, Kennedy. I mean, even the word Kennedy goes back to kill Kennedy, which I think is like a term in Gaelic that means like head wound or something like that. So there is so much different aspects to it that show that there's some sort of Masonic or alchemical ritual at play. And I would argue that the Masons would love to think that they've created a portal.
Fucking Freemasons.
And they would love to. Not the Masons, but these, you know, they're stand-in for whatever body is hiding behind that cloak. But you get what I'm saying, where they would love the notion that we conspiracy theorists think that they've created a tetragrammaton stand-in, you know, in the modern world. I think we're giving them too much credit. I think that's because conspiracy theory is a part of the symptom of this ritual. Like it's a symptom of this ritual. And I wonder what you guys think about, you know, Michael Hoffman's thoughts on conspiracy theorists kind of just being these like conspiratainment puppets who are just no different than the pundits who talk about the mainstream talking points. Like we're furthering that same agenda. Maybe not us, we, the three of us here, but, you know, the average conspiracy theorist who maybe isn't doing the original source research that the three of us like to do, you know, they're kind of playing into that agenda. Do you think?
I think it's a little gatekeepery. It's a little bit fart, like, you know, like enjoying the smell of your own farts, but nobody else's. There's a little bit of an air to
entitlement,
just because, because I really firmly believe that today's conspiracy theories are the best equivalent that we've got to, you know, old school mythology. Because right now we all kind of feel like we're way too smart to believe that there's an actual Zeus that's throwing lightning bolts down on the ground. And, you know, a lot of people kind of look back at that older pagan and early monotheistic, like literal sense, outside, you know, some groups that believe, you know, full out. But I think that like now a lot of people feel more secular and more scientific. Mm-hmm. So conspiracy theories, though, kind of takes a little bit of that load off. Like this is where you get to sort of fantasize and kind of imagine different things that are happening and putting pieces together kind of the same way that like those original peoples were trying to explain nature. But now we feel like we've got nature figured out. So, and mythology kind of inherently denotes explaining nature. Right. But once you've defined nature in so many terms, what do you move on to? So again, conspiracy theories fills that role because now it talks about how does culture evolve? How does psychology, philosophy, politics? Mm-hmm. And if you assume anything other than what you were taught in school or what you can just find off the bookshelf, then you're technically a conspiracy theorist. If you know, your mom and your dad planning your surprise party is a conspiracy. But also if two people meet in a room and they're like, I think you should be president, we're going to make you president, and that happens, that's also a conspiracy. Mm. And to pretend that none of that actually happens is just a little bit crazy. So, right. I mean, I think even if there is, let's take his criticism at face value and just talk about like a TikTok video that's just calling everyone in the Illuminati with like funny sound effects. That's still perpetuating the same kind of mythology of conspiracy theory that maybe is in 200, 300 years, the same way we might look into the origin of like a god's name and the origin of like your state's name.
Yeah,
like, right. Oh, wow, it was named after these Indians. Oh, wow, actually the Indians built on top of this mound. And then you find out about the mound builders. Like there might be people hundreds of years that hear that silly, oh, Jesus and the Illuminati, but that's going to be their gateway into figuring out that there was an actual Bavarian Illuminati in 1776. So I love the idea that like, the concepts and the names are perpetuating. I don't like that it's dressed in, you know, TikTok-y sort of surface level stuff, but it just feels too gatekeeping to like criticize Hoffman, it too much.
Hoffman calls that the theater or the spectacle of carnage, or the theater what is the other word he uses? Very, you know, poignant and well said when he puts it the way he does.
I mean, not everyone can be stoic, right?
Yeah. But also, you have to take into account, because I really like the way that you're tackling it, Thomas. And I sent Thomas his one of his latest episodes, so he knows exactly what we're talking about when it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
When
oh,
it comes,
by the way, I'm partly responsible for Hoffman starting the podcast. I should say that on the air. He conferred with me on how podcasts were created. I basically taught him how to do the podcast thing. So I take a little credit for unleashing Hoffman into the podcast.
Unleashing a beast, yeah, and I think that. It's going back to the, because this whole thing of, oh, chasing down original sources and all this stuff. Well, a lot of the original sources for old mythology, that all that's been gone for ages, and we take that for what it is, right? We take people's word for it. So, and I, when you dropped out, Mark, I was talking to Thomas about what could we possibly do about some lizard cabal that's running everything at the White House or whatever it is. Like, what could we realistically do? You know, because these guys act like we have this crazy capability of actually doing something about it, because they'll sit there and they'll criticize, like, oh, you guys aren't really doing much. You guys are just talking about it. It's like, well, what have you done, right? Other than in your time, you did what you did and you talked about what you talked about in your time. But, you know, things evolve and things change. And what could you really possibly do other than, without inciting violence or doing anything out of the ordinary, to actually bring forth a change? What are you able to do? And that's what I want an answer to. Like, what are you physically able to do without demeaning anybody or hurting anybody?
We're doing it right now. We're talking about it. I think that's how things change, is reform happens when ideas get spread. And at first, new ideas are suppressed because they go against the grain, and then they get integrated. And, you know, it's like what happened to the secret societies in the colleges. They all got like overturned by the 70s woke liberal feminist movements that, you know, said, oh, you have to let women into these groups. Oh, you have to let minorities into these groups, which everybody agrees with. Like, yeah, let women and all different types of people be a part of these groups. But, you know, when that happened, a lot of those secret societies kind of shifted towards the corporate sphere. But I think when we're talking about these like ideas, there is a level to it where solutions are far afield and people are sort of sucked into this depression and cynicism. And, you know, I'll say, just from our conversations, Juan, you know, you tend to lean towards nihilism. I think that's probably because you have a family and young kids. I mean, it's probably easier for someone like me to be optimistic, considering I don't have children and I'm in a relationship. That's all my commitments are to the physical world, right? So it may be that, but I do think that as human beings, as beings with souls, we have an imperative to push a change towards the better, right? I think there's like a soul instinct in human beings to make a positive change, right? That can never be defeated. Like, that's the original will, so to speak. And whether or not the audience picks up on that, you know, I think we're kind of pushing that forward in our own unique ways by looking into what we're looking into, not to, you know, blow smoke up our asses or something. But I just think, like, when we get confronted with this black pill theorism of like, yeah, well, you know, the lizard people run the world and we're all fucked. It's like, yeah, that's only true if you stop talking about it, because, you know, these paradigms can be shifted. And even maybe those allegories and metaphors of reptilians are just that, like, maybe they're just metaphors and there aren't really reptilians running the world. Or maybe not, you know, maybe there is some reality to it. I think it works in a double-edged way, where, like, if you truly believe that reptilians are running the world and you've succumbed to that fear that might instill in you, well, then you've fallen victim to the agenda. Well, if you do the converse where you're like David Icke and you find out all this information about the royals doing all this bloody evil stuff, and you can't, you know, maybe you can't go out and say it's humans. You have to say it's reptilians, because that's just fantastical enough for them to not cut your head off, long enough for you to keep talking about it, long enough for people to realize, oh, maybe David's not talking about lizard people, he's talking metaphorically about this group that believes in this lizard brain thing and this serpent.
You know who recently said that on the interview that I did with Jay?
Someone said it to me. I can't take credit for that thought. I forget who.
Was an entire either Channel 4 or BBC documentary that basically was calling Ike an anti-Semite for that exact same reason, where he's saying he's just putting the L word in here instead of the J word.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that's definitely like the danger now with the whole Kanye West. I call it MYA Ultra, where MYA is now convincing everybody that conspiracy theory is ultimately just Jew hatred. And I think that's stupid. And obviously none of us have any problems with Jews. Donut has been on both of our shows. He's Jewish. I had him on to talk about the Kanye thing, because I don't want Michael Hoffman's perspective on that, you know, personally.
Donut's my favorite Jew, actually.
Yeah, like, I like Hoffman. I want to get his perspective, but I also want to get Donut's perspective, because I believe in everybody's equal, even if they don't like each other. I want to see why people don't agree with each other. And yeah, maybe Kanye West has read some of Hoffman's more concealed work, but, you know, Hoffman himself isn't exactly hater either. Like, he's after that whole political aspect of Zionism.
Wasn't Kanye quoting this racist comedian that got kicked off Rockfin, I think, for saying, like, having a race
Benjamin?
Wasn't he quoting Owen Benjamin, like saying, like, oh, they don't understand him or something like that? And literally the dude was like, wasn't he saying the N-word, like hard R N-word? And
a lot of comedians in the edgier alternative, like the real comedy world, they're not afraid to say slurs and be offensive, because that's in their mind part of being a real comedian.
No, I think that's just a facade. That's an excuse.
That's what Owen Benjamin was doing, was he's being a comic and saying, hey, I'm a comic, I have freedom of speech, I should be able to say something even if it's offensive. And that got him canceled, because that was at the beginning of the woke, you know, takeover of media. And so yeah, maybe Kanye heard.
Well, I got a different theory on Kanye, and I'm surprised that maybe this has come up, but I haven't heard anyone mention this. But when Alex Jones had lost his lawsuit, right, he made that first video where he just went off the rails. He's like, you know what, I did it, you know, I was the killer, I had the guns, I showed up, I killed those kids, you know, put me in jail, I'm the murderer. Did you guys remember any of that stuff?
Yeah.
So, and it was like obviously over the top, and it was like, you know, pin my arms to the cross and lift me up onto the hill, sort of a monologue speech to kind of like put the whole thing into like this satirical perspective. He was working through some stuff, right? So when Kanye gets on, he kind of does the exact same thing, but where Alex took like a hard right turn, Kanye took a hard left turn, and he took it in a completely different angle that even shocked Alex Jones at that point. But it felt like that same Andy Kaufman performative aspect to it. But again, you know, I don't know any of them personally.
Yeah, no, I don't dig it. I don't negate that at all. I think that's really interesting to point out. Maybe there's some sort of you know, symbol or ritual to that. You know, I definitely can't say I know Alex Jones's intentions or motivations. I've interviewed people that work with him, and they seem to me like, you know, honest individuals who are concerned with the same things that we are. But
that's what I'm saying. It felt like he was just frustrated and working his frustration out through that very facetious kind of interview.
Yeah.
And maybe like Ye just sort of like followed in suit a little bit. Like, I'm going to work through my frustration by just, you know, saying outright all the things that people are hinting at as like a therapeutic way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was definitely shocking. And I don't know, the whole face mask thing didn't give him any credibility for sanity, you know, points, right? I mean, it just, that was over the top.
It was the face mask and not the Netanyahu that did it for you.
I didn't even watch it. I just saw like other people's takes on it. I mean, maybe that
again,
was
again like Dirty Jobs, man. I felt like it was my dirty job to watch that whole thing and see exactly, you know, outside the clips and the context. And at least for that one, I could say if you've just seen the clips, you don't actually need any more context. The clips are pretty standalone.
Yeah. That's relieving. Yeah, I you know, I also I think that's one of the reasons why we enjoy the, you know, topics like alchemy and secret societies and whatnot, because it allows us to go into the past where, you know, you can't really apply contemporary morals to history, right? We're looking at a bunch of, you know, people who were probably for the most part racist and sexist, and that's because that was the particular perception at that time that was dominant, right? So
and they were literate and they probably had enough money to focus on philosophical pursuits as opposed to like feeding their family and taking care of their parents.
I'm not saying that to like justify any of those you know, negative outlooks. I'm just saying like when we talk about people in the past, we're not like culpable for their beliefs as much as if we were like to examine Kanye West and, you know, he's contemporary. It's just, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is like, sounds like wimpish of me, but I do feel like on the defense with topics like that, with having a show like mine, I don't want to like lean into something that's so extreme that then I alienate a big part of my audience. I just want to have a fair and open, balanced conversation. And as I say that, I'm like, isn't that Fox News's slogan? But yeah, so I don't know. It's interesting to talk about this stuff, but it definitely borders on the extreme. And I don't know. It's just, I feel like that's the danger that Hoffman's kind of pointing at. It's like when you become like these conspiracy pundits who like try to find conspiracy in every latest news story, you almost like fail to overcome that manipulation that's being done to, you know, who you think is not like who you think is being fooled by the news, even though you yourself, not us three, but people who do this type of thing, maybe they're not fooled, but a big part of what they're doing is like, yeah, look what they're hiding from us now. It's like this confirmation masturbatory act, you know, where you're just like, you're like getting off on the fact that you know this stuff and everyone else is a sheep, you know. And I think that
the meme with the guy in the corner at the party,
right? Yeah, and that ends up like failing us in the long run. I think as culture, like conspiracy theory, if we're gonna validate it and redeem it at all, I think we need to, you know, bring
but
some
the problem sort of Mark
discrimination to it, academically speaking.
I 100%, I'm one of the biggest skeptics too that there is, but the issue is when they know that we're watching out for a lot of these occultic themes within these news stories. For example, the latest one, Tate, right? The whole thing with him and his arrest and then the symbolism behind that and the language that the president of the United States uses on a speech of, yeah, we're the new world order is about to come, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but these sort of things where maybe perhaps they want to paint you out to be the schizophrenic person, but there's some validity when it comes to a lot of these theories because it seems like almost everything is a sort of ritual in some way related to the occult. Like, and that's the problem because it seems like almost everything is related in some form to a magic.
Yeah, but one, is that because everything is inherently occult, or is that because it's the information is being filtered through a lens that is inherently occult? I mean, the English language, yeah, we all know, has a sort of occult foundation to it. But then on top of it, like the television, media, internet conglomeration of cables and electric signals and wires and clouds of data, like that's all to a certain extent like an.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Egregore.
Yes.
And it's full of sigils. It's full of sigils, right? So if you're participating in that wavelength, you're going to absorb, you're going to become initiated whether you realize it or not, so to speak.
You're a fish in the water, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
And well, also, like that saying, when you have a hammer, what is it?
Everything becomes a nail.
Everything becomes a nail, right?
Yeah. And that's why I say, I agree with you, but then I also pose that as a disagreement in the sense that it's like, well, we can, not everything can be a nail, logically speaking. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of what gets the most attention has a veil of symbolism to it, right? And that's what people spend so much time analyzing in this sort of short attention span sectors of conspiracy theory. Is not to put that down as less than, because it is interesting and is definitely worthwhile to maybe pull people into a new perspective, but it can also be a trap.
But to add on to this whole thing, because we're talking about symbolism, we're talking about sigils. For example, I have movie posters in the background right now, and you can decipher those and decode those all you want. But we have literally Paranoid American Comics here, and I've also done a comic book with him. And a lot of the times that we put stuff in these comics, these symbols, they aren't always all the time occultic. Right? We do it just because it's fun. So just because you see that certain symbol there, it doesn't always mean something. But
not accidental. It's not like you guys are like, cubes are fun. Like, you know what a cube means and you're using it in your comic book.
Yes, because there's a story behind it. But
yeah,
it's
in the title.
Yeah, not all the symbolism in it is pertaining to something occult.
Intentional.
Yeah, exactly.
I get you. I think that happens. Yeah, it's like, again, it's the medium. Like Thomas just said, a fish in the water. We're in the ether. We're in the miasma of mysticism. And, and American culture has been steeped in it from the beginning. And the people who created the media and control the media are definitely aware of a lot of this stuff. So, yeah, that's why I think we enjoy, speaking for myself here maybe, but I think that's why the three of us enjoy the topics that we get into most often rather than the more pop topics that are also talked about. But there's been some very important things that have gone on that I guess I haven't talked enough about. I mean, the whole deal with Russia and Ukraine is a huge part of what's going on in 2022. I mean, if you look at the wiki for 2022, every month they list some sort of event involving Russia or the Ukraine, almost like they're creating a timeline here for World War III, you know, like this over coverage of this event to maybe even, who knows, overshadow what's going on after 2020 and 2021, and the whole, oh yeah, let's just forgive and forget about all the unnecessary deaths and all the strange, mysterious medical malpractice things that have gone on, right? I mean, trying to skirt around the certain hot words, because I don't know, maybe we'll put this on YouTube, but yeah, I don't know, it seems like Ukraine and Russia, that whole conflict has taken up the landscape of the media, and maybe they're using that to take the attention away from the genocide. I mean, really, that was pushed on elderly and overweight people with this jab and all the other things that have resulted from that. I mean, all these very healthy people too. I mean, all the soccer players that collapse mysteriously.
It's a coincidence.
Celebrities that have passed away, under somewhat mysterious health circumstances.
I have to interject here. Just throw it out here, because anyone that truly believes that there is an international, you know, New World Order planning committee, like Illuminati or some kind of cabal or whatever, if you truly believe that, and you also believe in blood magic and that those people believe in blood magic, then it only makes sense that it was just a massive global blood magic, you know, sympathetic magic sort of operation. Because once you've got, like, you know, basically the world's already owned at this point, right? The explorers have explored. Everyone's planted their flags everywhere, except for Antarctica, which apparently we're still fighting over.
There's an opening there, Thomas. There's an opening, and it goes in. Owns
the rest of the outside of the little ring that we're in, But it's like the same concept where everything's been defined and explored and classified, and now people are just kind of like working their way into the fine little details. But like, what do you do if you're truly at the top and you've got everything and your family has owned everything for the last century or more? And you've amassed power and you've amassed influence and connections, like, what other ultimate sort of conclusion could you ever draw from all this? If you really believe in, like, Phoenician magic made its way all the way through, you know, BC, almost like Neolithic times, all the way to modern times, to where Pizzagate's real and blood sacrifice is real and all this is real, then what else would you need to not look at this entire pandemic as just a massive blood magic operation where mass sacrifice, I mean, the actual word Holocaust was basically just like a sacrifice of a lot of people. And that's kind of what's happened globally.
This isn't safe for YouTube anymore, but I'm going to go ahead and say it, that I'm not denying any events taking place, but I am on board with you, Thomas, and I haven't said it yet on.
Well, I'm not even saying that that's what happened, but I'm saying that that would be the logical conclusion if there were some kind of cabal. I'm not 100%.
I like
going to the scale, right? So if we're going 0 to 100,
I think
I'm probably at a 50 right now.
I think if we're talking alchemically, that event that happened during World War II was some sort of, what if this guy, his name starts with an H, what if he was trying to find Philosopher's Stone by giving up? Because what, again, they put it in this media, the whole Full Metal Alchemist anime, at the end, it's like, spoiler alert, what does it take to make a Philosopher's Stone? Oh, a bunch of people. So, I'm just saying, it's, and apparently 88 is racist. Do you guys hear about that? 88?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Because it's HH88.
Yes. H-H-8. Yeah, exactly. So anyways, I think that's what was going on there. And obviously a lot of people lost their lives. It was horrible. It is horrible. But I think that's what's going on. If you want to also follow the mainstream narrative that he was an occultist.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's not exactly contemporary to 2022, but I appreciate the info there, Juan. I didn't know that. But in 2022, we had another, even worse than last year, right? Last year, 2021, there was the Astral World event where a bunch of people were crushed in a crowd, what they're calling now a crowd crush. I don't know if this is a term that's been used before.
Was that this year or 21?
I think it was 21, but there was one in October of 2022.
There's like some medical term. It's called like compression asphyxiation. Yeah, I saw that. Something like that.
You talk about the one overseas, right? In like Vietnam or something?
South Korea, there was one in October. But they use the term in the media, crowd crush, which is interesting because it's CC33. I don't know. Thomas, maybe you can fill us in.
No comment on Thomas.
I only got the 32, so I only know about the CB.
Okay, good. Okay.
I can tell you about CBD. That's as far as I got. I got to the CBD.
CB radios. Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, so there's this kind of tragic, not to laugh at the people crushed, but yeah, it's you know, weird that happened on Halloween in South Korea. And then we have this sort of Halloween-ish Astral World performance where other people were killed in a similar fashion the year before. So,
I want to throw another little theory out here really quick that instead of, I mean, blaming the rapper, the entertainer, I mean, obviously the venue, like if you look into it, the venue kind of like had bypassed some security procedures. They were supposed to put certain barriers that would prevent that kind of phenomenon. And I guess they just didn't put those up and they skipped some of that. But let's put all that aside. and in a Machiavellian way, like what actually happened, like who cares about the intent, or like who planned what and how it could have changed. Let's look at the actual event and the actual end result of it. And even if all of that was a pure accident and you assume the most benign origins of it, the end result's the same, and that end result still has the kind of energy with it, and that energy can be harnessed. So even if the theories come out or a group comes out and starts saying like, oh, this happened for this reason, just that gaining traction in the sort of global, you know, like mental mind that we all kind of share, just like the cultural idea of that being a ritual sacrifice event, it almost manifests itself into being this thing that gets perpetuated again, kind of like this mythology thing where, you know, these theories just take on little extra bits over time. And it's almost like this huge kind of snowball effect. And this is just going to be part of it regardless, even, you know, even if it was real or even if it was just a coincidence, like it's now part of the lore forever, essentially.
Mm. Yeah. Very interesting. So another thing that came up in 2022, if we're going to just go through the list here, there was a few coups. We had in Burkina Faso, which is an African country, for people who aren't aware, it's on the western portion of Africa. They had two coups this year by an Islamic faction. There's also some anti-coup movements in Sudan, based on probably previous year's political strife. And then also more close to us in Peru, President Pedro Castillo was arrested after he tried to dissolve Congress in a coup attempt. And the vice president, Dina Boluarte, succeeded him. So a lot of political upheavals this year. I don't know, maybe there was more. We have a new leader of the Communist Party in China, Xi Jinping. Xi Jinping was elected to General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party. So this is his third term as the paramount leader of China. What else happened in world affairs? Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan clash. You guys are like, all right,
we need to hear like a beep 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 beep.
Yeah. a lot of clashes this year. Turkey and Israel clashed. So yeah, a lot of stuff going on in the world.
That one in particular, Turkey and Israel, is like a time as old as history itself, right?
So well, and then also
on like the longest running season now. They're on like season 3000 or something.
Yeah. Well, in the opposite, Japan, which is usually relatively peaceful, their prime minister was assassinated. I think he was a former prime minister at the time, but he was assassinated while giving a public speech. Did you guys hear about this or look into this at all?
Mm-mm.
I heard about it. I didn't look into it too much further. Yeah, I'm the paranoid American.
Very interesting.
Yeah, geopolitics is not my forte because I feel, and this is my personal opinion, I feel like we have enough issues here in the States to worry about than to be sending out aid in the billions of dollars to other countries when we have people who have literally served our country that are treated like dog shit when they're here.
Nobody's aiding them. I mean, we're manipulating these governments with our CIA, if anything. But
said a peaceful, you know, Japanese is typically like a peaceful people, Mark. I just want to mention that recently I've been doing most fun research over Christmas break, which I wouldn't recommend other people, but the origins of human and child sacrifice in particular across all cultures. And I figured I had gotten to the end of my list and I had documented everything. And I was like, you know, I need to start looking into like cultures outside of the ones that influence the West directly. And sure enough, the earliest records of Japanese civilization mention this concept of a human pillar, where they would kidnap somebody against their will and bury them under the foundation of a certain building. Or more typically, it started under bridges because the waters were violent. The waters were known to kill a lot of people and it would knock the bridges over. And at some point, I don't know the exact origin. I don't know if anyone does, but someone figured, well, we're going to take a person. A lady was crossing the bridge with her baby, and they kidnap this lady and they bury her under this pillar and they rebuild the bridge, and it had never fallen again after that. But then there was also like these ghosts that would be associated with it, and apparently in like the older concept of feng shui incorporated some of this human pillar concept. So anyways, it's a throwback, but it was one of those things where it was like, aha, finally. It wasn't like, it wasn't just the Europeans and the Mesoamericans and Mesopotamians that were into human sacrifice early on. Like, it's at the root of almost every culture, and it threw me for a loop, because, like, you know, even the Buddhists did the very similar thing where they would kidnap someone against their will, but it was seen as a good thing because they were kind of reuniting that person back with, you know, the center.
Some theories say that maybe certain Egyptian pharaohs went east and became, you know, Buddhists to a certain extent. I mean, you have the Tibetan Book of the Dead and the Egyptian Book of the Dead. I mean, that can't be a coincidence, but I'm sure there are other books of the dead. But Peter Jenks, who wrote a book called The Occult, Occult Thailand, he was on my show this year and talked about the same concept in Thai culture, where they would sacrifice a person for a building at the center of the city, and that would be like the town center, and the nature spirits were personified, right? So the river would be a deity that then this ghost of a human person that they kidnap would be like the stand-in now for that river.
And they'll be the protector because they were ripped away from this physical world. They kind of remain longer in that spiritual world to protect that. And what's crazy is I found a post in the Singapore subreddit from November of this year where someone claimed that their dad was working in construction and that in the rural areas they were still doing this. And I forgot the exact name, but like, that's, it's still happening to this day.
Yeah, that's what Peter said about Thailand, that in certain parts of Thailand they still do it. And, you know, in the more urban areas they just have more like a ceremonial stand-in, exactly, like somebody who's recently passed for whatever reason.
Like, so like Bohemian Grove apparently has, you know, like the stand-in dummy, Wicker right? Man. Like the cremation of care is the Wicker Man, you know? It's an effigy and not the real thing.
And that goes all back to where we kind of started with the secret societies and psychological warfare with Michael Hoffman, who, you know, at the end here, has at the final page of text on in his book the Wicker Man, and how that word is connected to this whole type of to bend, you know, the word wick, Wicca, wizard, they all have that same root meaning. And, you know, it's sort of like bending reality. They're bending reality, and maybe that has something to do with these sacrifices and giving people over to the other world to affect things in this world.
What's interesting too is this is going out of 2022, but it links back in on this exact topic. But one of the original reasons that Carthage was founded, right, the Carthage from the Bible, is that the Phoenicians essentially wanted a place where they could go and practice these wild sacrifice rituals, because in their mind things had kind of, you know, all gone to hell because they were starting to do too much stand-ins. They were doing too many effigies, and they were buying sick babies that were already going to be dead anyways from the poor families and then offering those up. And the Phoenicians were sort of saying like, no, you know, God wants like our prime offerings. He wants like the children of noble class. So they actually founded it and became this whole entire state religion. And then over time, you know, the Romans see this, the Israelites see this, and they're like, whoa, you guys are like way too crazy right now. You know, we're doing everything symbolically over here. You guys can't be doing it literally. So it sort of like dissipates. But there might be, you know, if history is cyclical, there might actually be another ruling class that's like, you know, we're going to go and find our own city. Maybe we'll go and put it on an island and we'll call it Little St. James or something. And we'll just like, we'll keep doing our own Phoenician magic. And like in a public way, in a literal way, outside of the view of all these plebs that are, you know, forcing those idiots of Bohemian Grove to just do the stupid effigy stuff. Like, that's not even working. And that's why your political power is waning, because you've used this substitution and the gods are not favorable towards substitutions.
Well, and this enters, you know, another synchronicity this year that was like Juan going into all this old world stuff, meeting Dr. Narco and this whole connection. I mean, I definitely believe that there are groups of maybe European nobles who came to the so-called New World and maybe became these like Phoenician giants that they saw off the coasts of Florida, these like pale-skinned giants who were cannibals, you know, like who knows, maybe that devolved into that. But we also have the story of Prince Madoc, who, you know, came to the New World and left behind some of his Welsh followers and their descendants, and that became this Mandean tribe that people saw in the, you know, Wild West days during the westward expansion. They saw this Mandean tribe and they're like, these Indians look pretty white to me. And they had all these words that were similar to Welsh words. And they had this story of Prince Madoc. And, you know, I talked to a guy named Rick Osman, who has a book about that this year. He was very interesting to talk to, but, yeah, man, I wouldn't be surprised if there are little enclaves of Phoenicians or whoever else that came to the New World. I mean, we have towns in my state like Canaan and New Canaan, where some of the wealthiest people live. And what is Canaan? Canaanites, right? I mean, it's...
Well, and to add more credit to that, what is Canaan other than Samaria and a bunch of other areas? And right. Then what was Samaria other than like an amalgamation of like 100 different little tribes? And those tribes, some of them were as small as 30 people, and they still have historical record to this day because they had their own gods and they fought. So the, you know, when a city, like literally an entire tribe of 50 people, take on a group of 30 and they, you know, kill 20 and enslave the 10 that are remaining, now all of a sudden they're, you know, 70 big or they're 60 big. But I mean, if you kind of zoom out and apply that to the Wild West that you're talking about, it would have been, you know, not completely out of the realm that explorers would find a small tribe of 30 people that were literally the only 30 people left of that particular tribe. And once they kill them, they're gone forever. And if there was no record taken, and unfortunately a lot of Native Americans didn't have a lot of written record, it was all almost, you know, all vocal and storytelling, then they just vanished forever, essentially.
Yeah. Or, you know, blended with other bigger groups than, you know, and they kind of lost the.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Energy can't be created or destroyed. And I think that applies the culture in some ways, too.
When you look at like all the pirates and the seafaring culture, I mean, that wasn't exclusive to Florida. That was all along the East Coast. You have all these stories of pirates, and like a lot of those pirates, you know, they get mythologized, turned to folklore. You know, we remember like the characters like Captain Kidd and Blackbeard and all these other, but there were like whole groups of pirates that like were essentially, you know, companies or nations, you know, the what we would think of as a corporation. Now technically it would be what these pirates were doing. So yeah, I mean, who knows what kind of power center could have planted itself in that type of very intangible community, right? Like a nation at sea. Like that's what Ghislaine Maxwell was obsessed with, and you have to wonder why, you know, maybe she didn't come up with
Phoenician
that
herself. I really feel strongly it's that Phoenician.
She was what?
Same thing that Jordan Maxwell.
You didn't know about her Terramar project?
No, is that like some? It sounds like Scientology too, where they with the ships and all this stuff, right?
Well, yeah, Scientology did this to avert taxes. They thought they would live on the sea and have like a ocean nation. And L. Ron Hubbard lived a lot of his life at sea, but no. Ghislaine Maxwell created the Terramar Foundation, which was an idea of creating this like sea colony of people, you know, on ships and yachts, specifically yachts, you know, the wealthiest of the wealthy, in this sort of tax haven that had some sort of governmental body that it could use as an authority. You know, that was her dream or whatever, her plan. But she had a submarine license too, so it's like not that it's not really that far-fetched to think that maybe she had already participated in it, rather than it just being like some idea that was yet to transpire. Maybe there is a group like that that's already functioning that she was just trying to like create an offshoot of, or a mimic in a way, right? Like with this Terramar thing, and it only came to the public because of her other, you know, things that she was wrapped up in, that maybe these naval hidden, you know, what do they call them, breakaway civilizations, maybe we just don't know about them because they're in international waters and they can't break laws.
You're blowing my mind right now, because that plays into the whole the Cross of Hendai that I covered recently, where inscribed on there, Fulcanelli talked about a place that's indestructible of this coming apocalypse. And also, if you have the World War II link in there with Operation High Jump, where they literally bragged about this impenetrable fortress that they had uncovered supposedly in the ice or something. I think it was Admiral Donuts or something like that, the guy's name. It was a really weird name, and they talked about that the Fuhrer was in this fortress.
Admiral Byrd?
No, not Admiral Byrd. There was another guy that bragged about, he was like this famous advisor for the H-Man, and he bragged about, I'll find the quote, but he bragged about how they found this impenetrable fortress in the ice. And that was the whole thing with what happened to all the, after World War II, what happened to a large population of them? Did they go to South America? Did they go into Hollow Earth? Or did they go into this other realm, how you're talking about? Because this is something that the elites, this new Atlantis utopia type of thing that the elites are obsessed with, it just makes you think. I mean, it's really interesting.
When you say other realm, that I don't know if you think that I'm saying that. I'm saying people that live on boats.
I can put two and two together.
No, I'm talking about other dimensions,
bro. Boat, right? In order to join the Ghislaine Maxwell Yacht Club, right? You have to at least pay a certain amount and know the right people. So once you're in there, that's the exoteric. Once you get into the club and you park your little yacht, Ghislaine's at the end of the dock and she's like, hey, check this out, I got my submarine license, pop in. You pop in the submarine, she takes you straight down, and then bam, it's like, you know, the Disney cartoon Atlantis.
Yes, you know? A portal, bro. Exactly. And we know about,
like, you're not buying yourself into the yacht club, you're buying yourself into the connections at the yacht club and the submarine ride into another land.
Yeah, these underwater bases, or maybe, yeah, even like the Hollow Earth or something more fantastical than that.
If there was someone on the planet that would know about the entrance to and from, it would probably be, you know, Mossad connected, I would assume.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, as we talk about, because you're talking about, Mark, about like the whole hidden history. Well, there's the argument too, where was Atlantis? Was Atlantis a real place? Was the Garden of Eden a real place? So you have all these mythological places. Are they mythology? Are they something else? And when I say realm, that's why I said realm, because I'm thinking interdimensional, bro. Once you go underwater like that, that movie with the kaijus, it's in the Pacific Rim, where it was like a portal at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, and these things are coming through. That my mind directly goes to interdimensional and occult when it comes to these elites, because again, that's what they're about. And I think that's everything else that they're linked to, I think, goes back to that. And the Tate situation as of recently is just more evidence that it's still large and in charge, and this is still on people's psyche, this idea of these rings, if you catch my drift.
And I want to throw an analogy out here too. Sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Well, I'm just asking Juan what Tate has to do with the like rings, like groups of like people, you mean, like secret groups by that?
So the allegations against him of the trafficking of people.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Like a Saul Alinsky sort of rules for radicals way, like accuse those of what you're doing to throw the shade off of you.
Exactly. Cause these are guys that come off like that. It's like, why are you coming off? So usually like the guys who are super homophobic and they end up being like in the closet gays type of thing. That's what I'm getting. It's like, if you bash that so much and it's like, are you, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've met people like that before. Like,
the Shakespearean quote is what it's, the lady doth protest too much.
Right. You know what I'm saying, though? Exactly what you said, Thomas, of like, criticize those, but you're actually doing and you're projecting, you know, that's your way of coping.
I wanted to throw an analogy out here, too, because like when we talk about like Terra Nova, or even if we were just going to say like Atlantis or Illuminati or something, I liken it to Disney, right? So like, here's an example of three different perspectives. The same way that if I said Atlantis to three different people, So if you at Juan, you have to tell one of your kids, hey, what's Disney, right? Disney World. What is Disney World? And just have them explain it. They're probably not going to start talking about concrete and blueprints and prices and lines and stuff. They're talking about like the feelings and like the stories that go behind it. Like none of it's really going to be real, right? It's all going to be fantasy, but you're going to know the stitch between that. Well, like actually Disney's a corporation. It was founded by a guy and it's like on this leased property and they charge you for tickets and they upsell by 300% on the concession. Like, you know, that part. And then if you ask me about Disney, like I know about the back, you know, going and to work for there and like sitting in the office and having to deal with the corporate structure. So to like the three of us, Disney means three completely different things, but it's still the one thing. Like we're all still talking about the same thing from wildly different perspectives. Mm. And it's not that your kid is wrong. It's just that your kid is like attached to that, the like the product of Disney
level
like
of reality.
What Disney makes and what, like where they make their money and they spread their influence. That's what your kid knows about. And then, you know, you can see the two different connections between those. And I feel like there's an aspect of that to Atlantis where there's someone that's like, ah, oh, fucking Atlantis. You know, I got to clean the garbage out of that place every other Friday. I hate it. It's the worst traffic getting there. You know, I got to go through the Mariana Trench and that place is a nightmare at rush hour. So like there's someone out there that knows it so intimately that they're not even enamored by it anymore. And then there's probably someone that knows like, oh, well, Atlantis isn't really this fantastical place made of crystals and you can just teleport from one place to the other in advanced technology, but it is a place and here's where it is. You know, here's the boring version of it. That's kind of your, like you explaining Disney to your kid would be the boring version of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like here's the practical version, but a lot of people never want to leave that childlike wonder phase. Like they always want to believe that Disney is magic and miracles and princesses. And they never want to, you know, analyze it to the aspect of like, oh, this is actually a corporation set up to just directly profit at any cost.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's a stark reality that a lot of us come to realize as the Disney youth nostalgia wears thin and peels away and you see that it was a thin.
It doesn't happen to everyone though. It seems like some people stay enamored by Disney for life.
Mm-hmm. They just haven't seen, they're just not willing to look. You know, they've been sufficiently entrained to love what they've been shown. You know, it's not their
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not that.
It's Stockholm syndrome.
It could be interpreted that way, sure. But, you know, kind of coming to a close here, I hinted at maybe giving our audience our top episode or maybe in Thomas's case, considering the Occult Book Club, your favorite book that you've covered this year in 2022, really anything that you guys would like to say to put cherry on top, so to speak. I mean, I think it'd be nice to give a shout out to a few of the top listened to episodes from the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, because I always appreciate, you know, those guests like yourself, Juan and Thomas, who bring in a lot of people. You know, people want to hear what you guys have to say. So I'm always grateful that you guys have time to share with me here on the show and everybody else who's joined me in 2022. We had some really great interviews this year. So, but yeah, before I ramble on, Juan, Thomas, any final thoughts or top three, top one?
Yeah, so definitely Occult Book Club number 8, The Books of Enoch, Deciphering Scripture, and what's the last piece? And The Secrets to Ascension. I think that one got really good feedback. That's one of the more latest episodes. And my latest episode, number 125, The Occult Secrets of the North Pole and Santa Claus. I've gotten a ton of messages on that, and that's gotten a ton of views on YouTube and downloads. And I feel like every episode people be like, this is the best episode thus far. This is the best one. And then I come out with another one next week. Like, no, this is the one. So I feel like I'm always upping the bar and the ante every single episode. But yeah, if you want to check it out, I think that those, the Occult Book Club number 8, I mean, that was mind blowing. There was stuff set on there that was crazy. That's with Esoteric Eddie, Dr. Joseph Lumpkin, and Paranoid American here. And we went hard in the paint on that one. And yeah, number 125. And I think I've read maybe this year, I want to say I've read, I don't know, because I read so much. I don't know if that counts as a book, but like officially read books, I think I read like 10 books or so, and then numerous articles and journals after that, and just miscellaneous research. But like actually entire books on their own, probably about 10, I want to say, solid, like finished from cover to cover. And the rest was just like miscellaneous information and excerpts from here and there on different articles and journals and things like that. But yeah, if you want to check those out, those are awesome. And I love all my guests. I don't want to put anybody higher than anybody else, but it's all about a vibe, man. You know, some episodes slap better than others on certain weeks, just how you're feeling. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah,
I gotta shout out the book club number 5 again, which was the Benjamin Paul Blood, and right. It was on the anesthetic revelation and the gist of philosophy, which kind of explains that concept, you know, the anesthetic revelation is I was coming down off of an intense high off of nitrous, and the gist of philosophy was like, and for a split second I understood the Hegelian dialectic for the first time, and then it just evaporated. And you know, chasing that high, I couldn't come up with a better analogy of how sometimes this world works, where you're reading something and you feel that like something clicked for the first time, and it really does feel like it's, you know, it's probably a literal rush of dopamine, but it feels that you're getting a dopamine just from learning information. And I couldn't imagine a better way to like keep getting high over and over again is just keep learning new things and keep putting, you know, pieces together in different ways. So that was kind of my favorite one, and it's also a book that I don't think anyone would ever even pick up or look twice at if there wasn't someone kind of ranting about it and pointing out the cool aspects of it.
Yeah, I had never heard of that before, so I need to check that out. I'll probably start by listening to that episode. I agree with what you said, Juan, you know, not singling any one guest out. I will say, you know, my biggest episode in 2022 was obviously with David Icke in March. You know, almost 20,000 downloads on that episode alone, which is far above a lot of the other episodes that I've done, which is really cool. But it's also kind of weird because, you know, that means that a bunch of people listen to that episode and no other episodes of my show. So, hey, David Icke fans, come back. But anyways, I've had a bunch of really great episodes, and maybe
it was just an extra 20,000 FBI agents.
Yeah, right, that's is 10,000 bots
come back. They're like, all right, we're here.
yeah okay, well, not them, but you know, I'll point out maybe a few episodes that people slept on that didn't get as many listens as others. I would say a few of our Illuminati confirmed episodes people should go back and listen to, especially our interview with Reverend Ivan Stang. I mean, for the humorous aspect alone, it was just a funny conversation. And even if you're not interested in the whole Discordianism stuff, that will come up again on the show in the future. I plan on talking about Discordians and getting into their history. They're very weird and actually kind of loosely a part of the podcast community in a way. So yeah, I thought that was kind of very relevant to talk to him. And then my friend Al, Forum Borealis, met him this year. That was a great episode. I've talked to him a bunch since. Freddie Silva was another great interview. Even though it was only an hour long, he was great. So if people haven't listened to those, and Peter Jenks, who I mentioned earlier, the guy who wrote the book about Thailand, Thailand's occult aspects, bunch of great conversations with Chris Knowles, I think 2 or 3. But yeah. So many people. I mean, every episode has been great. I had Thomas along with Shane Golden on at one point. I still have to have Juan on to break down the homunculus in full force, but we'll plan that one for 2023. And yeah, shout out to everybody else who, you know, was on the show. If you happen to be listening to this, I appreciate any guest who also listens to the show. That's always cool when people say, oh yeah, I love your show. I'm like, whoa, really? You go on podcasts that you listen to? Like, I thought I was the only one who did that. But yeah, so very cool year for the show. Thomas, Juan, I look forward to more episodes with you in 2023. I feel like we should do some sort of alchemical or occult philosophorum. I used to do a show called the Elemental Philosophorum where we just talked about more sciencey stuff, but maybe we meet once a month and talk about the occult philosophies that we've been sifting through that month, you know, because we
three
of us have unique perspectives on this stuff, and it'd be cool to make it a regular occurrence. I know the audience would certainly appreciate that. So, all right, dudes, any final words before we close this episode out?
Happy New Year, and I love you guys.
I love you too, Thomas. You don't even know how much, bro. You know what? Yeah. No, for real, this has been a great year, and 2023, I think, is going to be even crazier, and it's going to be big. It's going to be huge.
Let's get canceled.
It's going to be huge. No, I don't not get canceled, but I feel like I think things
Let's
are really going
to
take.
The edge.
It's starting to really warm up. Like right now, it's like there's a storm brewing, and it's really just going to come full force 2023. And hopefully, yeah, I appreciate everybody that listens. And my show has experienced substantial growth this year. And I feel like I'm only getting started. So, yeah, thank you guys for listening. I was going to be on my feed as well. Love you all. And I love you guys, too. And, yeah, we should definitely do that. I like that name, the Occult Philosophorum. That sounds really cool. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And I love you both, too. And everyone listening, the love is extended to you all. And, yeah, I'm excited. 2023, we didn't really get into any predictions. Juan just gave you his prediction. I'm predicting sunny skies and warm weather as we leave this mini ice age, as Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson calls it. I'm expecting more tropical storms, hurricanes, and warm weather.
Bro, why are you sending that shit over here? No, no.
Hey, we get hurricanes in Connecticut too, brother. I lived through Hurricane Sandy. I mean, I know what it's like. Don't worry. I'm not trying to call him on. I'm just making a prediction that will probably be affirmed because it's a pretty open and general prediction. Thomas, any predictions before we wrap up?
I want to leave it on a positive note, so I'm not going to leave my prediction out there, but I'll say it's AI related and it's not fun.
Well, let's tune into the Occult Book Club to hear maybe Thomas's prediction in real time as it unfolds.
Everything's going to be great, I'm sure. Everything's going fine. Everything's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You look at any of the charts, we're all on the up and up on every metric. Don't even worry about it.
I have the same optimism. We are not blissfully ignorant. We are well aware of what's to come, folks, but we are a part of that 100th monkey effect, right? So let's steer towards the optimistic, like Thomas said. And until next year, folks, immerse yourself in the moment, wherever you are, in the now, whatever party you happen to find yourself at this New Year's. And we love you. Thanks for tuning into our shows. Peace. Thank you.